Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Mercedes Kirkle, and she is an author and a spiritual growth facilitator and a reader of the Akashic Records, who in July 2010 began receiving daily messages from Mary Magdalene, quite extraordinary messages for humanity's evolution and spiritual growth. And that eventually resulted in the birth of her book, Mary Magdalene Beckons, Join the River of Love, which contains the full series of Mary's heart-opening and mind-expanding messages, along with Mercedes' illuminating commentary. So welcome to the program, Mercedes.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
You're very welcome. Now, as someone who does channeling myself, I guess I'm always intrigued by how other people start. So had you any experience of channeling prior to contact with Mary Magdalene? And how did it actually come about?
Well, in retrospect, I think it's been coming about gradually through my whole life, but I didn't realize it. And I tell that whole story in the book, but the short version is that it really started, obviously, in the fall of 2009. And at that time, I received a message from Spirit that I was to leave the big island of Hawaii, where I'd been living for the last 10 years. Now, I was very happy in Hawaii and thought that I was going to live there the rest of my life. So I checked this message out three times to make sure that I was hearing it accurately. And it was very, very consistent. So I decided to follow it because I had seen from receiving messages previously in my life that whenever I followed them, things worked out for the best, oftentimes far better than I could have orchestrated on my own. But this was definitely the biggest thing Spirit had ever asked me to do. So it was kind of a leap of faith. And I took a few months and closed up my life in Hawaii. But the message hadn't told me where I was supposed to go. And I didn't know where to go. So I went to visit my family. And they lived in the United States on the mainland. And it turned out that my family was needing some help, my parents in particular. And so I was very happy that I was there and available to help them. And that took about 4 months or so. And all during that time, I kept asking Spirit, okay, where am I supposed to be living? Where's my new home? And I did not receive anything. No messages at all. But almost to the day that I completed what I was able to do with helping my family, I started getting messages again. And what I've seen is what I call that I'm on a need-to-know basis with Spirit. And apparently I don't need to know very far in advance. My messages tend to come right when I'm supposed to take action. So the messages led me to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And as soon as I arrived there, it was completely obvious that that was where I was supposed to be. There were signs all over the place. And it was like the red carpet rolled out for me. I was given a place to live. Everything I needed was immediately provided for me. And about the third day that I was there, I was meditating in the morning, and I suddenly started to feel a very wonderful, very benign presence around me. And I especially felt it centered around my throat, and I had the sense that I was blocking this presence from coming through. And I really wanted it to come through. So I put all my intention on releasing whatever was in me that was blocking this presence from fully manifesting. And all of a sudden, a voice started speaking through me. And simultaneous with that, with the voice coming through, was the internal message that this was the voice of Mary Magdalene. And she gave a complete and exquisite spiritual discourse. And I had not received a message like this before, where a being came through and gave a complete spiritual talk. It was totally amazing to me and a beautiful experience. And by the end, I was just melted in a pool of bliss until I had I had a thought, and the thought was, I'm not going to remember this. And that was not acceptable to me. This message was profound, and I felt very important, and I felt like it needed to be recorded, not just for me, but for many other people. So without hesitating a moment, I asked Mary if she would repeat the message so that I could type it into my computer. And she said yes, and I went and got my computer, and she gave me the entire message verbatim again, exactly the same as the first time.
Yes.
And what that did for me was it confirmed for me that this was Mary Magdalene, because I could not have done that. I could not have recreated that message word for word identical to the first time. So that was how she started coming, and I didn't realize it at that time, but that was the beginning of her downloading an entire book to me. And she continued to come to me every day for the next month, and over that time transmitted 25 messages that were all equally exquisite and brilliant and had a whole, you know, perfect form to it that was a book that she was giving me.
Yes. Looking at your own comments that go along with each message, it would appear that you were already in some advanced state of understanding where spirit and the light are concerned. So what was your background before you actually had this contact?
Yes, I was drawn to spirituality from a very young age. My earliest memories are being 8 years old and starting to have spiritual experiences. And but they weren't of this nature. It wasn't involved for sure. Although at the age of 12, I did start to have visions where I remembered having walked with Jesus in the desert. What was interesting about this was that my family was Jewish, not Christian, and they were not particularly a religious family or very much interested in religious practice. So I didn't share this with my family. I kept it to myself because I didn't think they would understand or accept what was happening to me. But I continued from that point to be very drawn to spirituality, and it was much more Eastern spirituality. I was involved in two different spiritual communities, the first for 17 years and the second for 2 years, and very much oriented towards awakening to who I am, what is the nature of, what is my nature, and how am I related to God and all of life. And at the and during the second spiritual community I was involved in, I had a very profound awakening that for me was the fulfillment of that search, where I really came to know myself as non-separate from God and everything else. And I continued on from there. That was a little bit of a crisis for me in some ways. It was a wonderful awakening, and it was also a turning point, because I was kind of didn't know what to do with myself. My whole life had been oriented towards awakening and discovering who I was, and suddenly that felt fulfilled. And I started asking Spirit, what am I supposed to be doing now? And I started having visions again, and this time it was visions of a volcano and a lake, and in both visions I was leading groups of women in ceremony. And shortly after that, I met my next partner, who lived in Hawaii, and I went to Hawaii, and there was that volcano and that lake exactly as I had seen them in my visions. And my form of spirituality really changed in Hawaii. It grew in new directions. I became very connected to the earth and to the earth as the feminine mother principle. And I also started to receive messages from spirit while I was in Hawaii more directly. They weren't just intuitions or, you know, kind of general guidance. It was very clear messages, but they were more in the form of directives to me, telling me to do this or do that. And that was the form I started to become familiar with in Hawaii.
Yes, now, you've also had a different variety of experiences. If I recall correctly, when you were looking at the art in the Vatican, you had an experience. Would you like to talk about that?
Yes, that was probably my very first spiritual experience that I remember. I was 8 years old. I was at the New York World's Fair, and there was an exhibit from Italy where they were displaying the Pietà by Michelangelo. And my mother very much wanted to go. She's a great lover of art and masterpieces. And so we all went as a family. And again, because my family was Jewish, I didn't exactly understand what we were seeing or why we were going to it. I could tell it was important to my mother, and she tried to explain, but didn't make too much sense to me. For those who aren't familiar with the Pietà, it's a work of art, a beautiful statue of Mother Mary holding Jesus after the crucifixion. So we went inside the exhibit, and it was very dark inside with a spotlight on the stage on this piece of artwork. And we slowly walked through as we observed. And what happened for me was I went into a transcendent state. And not that I had those words when I was 8 years old, but that's what I would call it now. We came out, and I looked at my mother, and I could feel that she was in the same state that I was in. And it was also clear to me that the rest of my family wasn't, that they had a very different experience, and they were all ready to go on to the next whatever at the fair. And that was very powerful for me and stuck with me. And my family never spoke about it. That's kind of the way my family was. We didn't tend to talk about things, but it made a huge impression on me. And I think was the first step of my reawakening to my reconnection to Jesus and Mother Mary. And then later it became Mary Magdalene also.
Yes, I notice also around that same period of time, you sort of seem to branch out into different things that must have attracted your attention, mentioning that you found oneness with God, that you studied with an American shaman, and also belly dancing, which I gather was something you knew that you did in a past life. You were awakening your kundalini energy, and you became a carrier of tantric wisdom, so you were certainly getting around a bit.
Yes, all those things happened after I went through that awakening experience, which was in 97. And, you know, at that time, I started to really wonder, you know, where am I going from here? And it was like my spirituality really expanded outwards, and I started to have these different experiences. I'd been a dancer all my life, and I was just drawn to take a belly dance class, my first class ever, and that's when I had a very strong experience at the end of that class, where I remembered, you know, it felt like a past life memory. I remembered having done this before. And I remember that the movements were carrying esoteric knowledge of the kundalini energy and awakening, and that it was actually one of the forms in which that was preserved was through the dance and the movements. And then I also at that time started working with a Native American shaman. Out of that I had a reawakening to my pagan roots and remembering, you know, practicing the divine feminine and ritual and ceremony, and then started to also reconnect with tantra and sacred sexuality and remembering that I had practiced that and had actually taught it in the ancient temples where it was a part of the temple practice.
Did you think at that particular time that you must have had some contact with Jesus in a previous life?
You know, that early memory that I had of having walked with him really receded for me into the background. And in some ways, in my conscious mind, I kind of forgot about it until I was in Hawaii and made the reconnection first, you know, with Mary Magdalene and with Isis. And so I didn't hold on to that, and I didn't think about that. It was actually very far from my consciousness. So I don't know why exactly, but I've had this quality all my life of taking these experiences and really, you know, respecting them as being very profound, but also not kind of getting attached to them or holding them in a way that made me special or different. I just took it as, you know, this is the next step of the path, and I'm being helped in this wonderful way, and just followed to where it seemed to be wanting to lead me.
So, you know, you tell us that, I believe it was you, or information you got through Tom Kenyon, that Mary was a priestess of Isis, and through that, her memories of Yeshua came to life, or your memories.
Right. Well, yes, but it was even more my memories of Mary Magdalene at that point, and that was the bridge. That happened in 96. I think I'm remembering the right date. Not 96.
And all this is happening before you actually started in 2010 to receive the daily messages.
Exactly, yes. Now, I was teaching a sacred sexuality workshop, and a friend said I should check out this book by Tom Kenyon, which I'd never heard of. And in it, he's channeling Mary Magdalene, and she reveals that she was a priestess of Isis and was practicing sacred sexuality with Yeshua, which is the Aramaic name for Jesus, and says that Isis told her that at this time those practices were to be revealed, and she does reveal them in very simple form in the book. And what happened for me was, as I was reading it, every practice she described instantly became fully activated within me, and I was able to do the full practice. And I was quite surprised, and it was very wonderful. And I also at a certain point started to get concerned, because she says, and I understood, that this energy is the same as what in India is called the Kundalini. And in traditional spirituality that I had been involved in, there's many warnings about the Kundalini, and that it's can be dangerous to have the Kundalini awakened if you're not being guided by someone who really understands and will guide you in a way that keeps you safe. So I became a little bit concerned, and I started to try to find someone who had some background in the sex magic of Isis and could guide me in what was happening in this awakening for me. And I couldn't find anyone. And finally, I just called on Isis, and I said, Isis, please, you're going to need to guide me, because I don't know anyone else to turn to. And she did. She started coming to me. And the first thing that she did was said that I should start leading a priestess training for women. And I was very surprised and very reluctant. And I said, I don't feel qualified to do that. I'm just waking up to my own priestess roots and lineage, and I don't feel like I'm ready to be guiding others. And she said, don't worry, I will give you everything you need. So I again went on faith and said, okay. And I led this training, which ended up being a year-long training. And every time before we'd have a meeting in the morning, Isis would come to me and give me a full download of everything I was supposed to do in the training that day, down to the music I was to play and everything. And it turned out to be an amazing, wonderful experience. So that lasted for a year, and then at the end of that year was when I got the message that I was supposed to leave the Big Island and was guided to Santa Fe, and then Mary Magdalene started coming to me herself.
Yeah. Now, you obviously talk a lot about the feminine energy. Do you believe, or do you know, in fact, that there is a distinct difference between the feminine and the masculine energy?
I do believe there's a difference, and it's a lot of what Mary is talking about in her messages. She absolutely states quite a few times, not to confuse that with gender, that everyone has masculine and feminine energy within them, and actually all of life has masculine and feminine energy. She talks about that God is, you know, mother, father, God, that there are both, and that everything is created in that image of God as having both mother, father, masculine, feminine within, and that it's also reflected in our outer world as well. And so she describes very specifically in the book what these differences are, and she points to that most of us have been deprived of the feminine to a great degree, and we have been we're in a state of imbalance where the masculine has been held up as the way, and we've become very strong in the masculine for both men and women, and that now for our spiritual growth, what's very critical is that we strengthen the feminine so that we can come into balance, because the new age is about the union of the masculine and feminine. And in order to prepare ourselves for that, what most of us need is strengthening our feminine so that we come into balance.
Did you perhaps always know that your destiny was on this type of level of spiritual understanding and teaching? Because quite clearly you came into life with that as part of your life plan.
Well, when the last year that I was in Hawaii, I started to feel this longing for spirituality to be what my work was really about. And prior to that, it was a part of my personal life, but it wasn't, you know, what I was doing for work specifically. And so I definitely had, you know, this longing and desire, but I didn't know what form it would take and how it would manifest. But I was praying for quite a while that I could make this transition. And then when Mary started coming to me and giving me these messages, it was very clear to me that this was what my path was now, to support this getting out to the world, because it seemed so clear to me that her wisdom was very unique and important and could help very many people, and that was her desire, to connect with everyone who could be helped by what she was bringing forth.
Yes. Sort of refer to some of the messages now, because I noticed in one of the early ones, very early ones, that that this sort of spiritual statement is very, very much out of the top drawer, as I call it, to ask us to live without judgment or blame. Now, other people may think they do anyway. How do you sort of see that being applied to people's lives? What are they doing wrong, possibly?
Well, it has to do with this understanding of the difference between the masculine and the feminine, and that they're two different approaches. And what she's saying is that we need access to both. And there are times when the feminine approach will be more accessible to us and effective, and times when the masculine will be. And so it's to our benefit to have both. And the masculine approach tends to be more of an approach of discipline, an approach of bringing our mind to bear on things. So the masculine approach to not having judgments or blame is to just try to stop doing it and not judge. And many people have that desire, and many people that I talk to feel frustrated by the fact that as much as they would like to be doing that, it's difficult, and they don't feel like they've really been successful in the way that they would like. And Mary's bringing a whole different approach to that same issue, which is the feminine approach. And she says that the feminine approach basically within the human structure involves three things. It involves our relationship to our body, our relationship to our sexuality, and our relationship to our emotions. And that those three together form the foundation that allows us to move into our heart. And the heart is really the seat. I like to call it the throne of the feminine within us. And she says the one for most of us that most needs strengthening is our relationship to emotions, and especially pain, painful emotions. She says if we understand that rightly, it becomes an avenue that takes us into union with God. And most of us never learned that. Instead, what we learned was that when we experience painful emotions, the thing to do is to try to get out of it as quickly as you can. And then even better yet, to never have them, to avoid them all. And there are many different ways that people have, it's kind of like strategies that people have developed to avoid their pain, to avoid feeling their pain. And one of them, one of the ones that's very rampant in our time, is for people to go into their minds and to do things such as judging. When you're in pain and you want to avoid that, you can take that energy, go up to your mind, and judging is basically making someone wrong, making yourself wrong, maybe making the other person wrong, and coming up with reasons, rationale to support that. What's wrong with that person or that situation or whatever? And she says that the feminine approach to this is to take that as a sign that you're in pain and to really deal with the pain. And when you do that, the judgment will dissolve in and of itself. You don't have to deal directly with the judgment. You deal with the underlying issue, which is the pain. And I have found that for myself and for many people that I have, you know, worked with in bringing this process to them, that this can help people in ways that bringing discipline and trying to just change your thinking has, to a certain extent, not worked for people. And that bringing this feminine approach is, you know, can be very, very helpful.
Do you think that people are very quick to make a judgment, and it's wrong in the sense that they very rarely know all the circumstances of any person involved, so really they're not in a position to make a judgment?
Well, I think many of us are trained to be very judgmental. We see other people doing it from a very young age, and it's even supported, you know. A lot of our education has to do with proving rightness and wrongness and all of that, and we're rewarded for doing it well. We get awards and all of those kinds of things. So it's part of the mental training that we've had that I think has been out of balance and has hurt us to not be in balance in this way. And so bringing this balance of the emotional skills and development is what I think will, can really, really help people.
I picked out of various chapters some of what I think are the key sentences. And again, in chapter one, Mary talks about the feminine coming to the front. And that would lead to balance and to learn the practice of receiving and transmitting love and light. Now, I think that's wonderful to remind people of that. But I wonder if everyone knows how to transmit love and light.
Well,
but they do anyway. Think they do it, that is. What do you say to someone who questions what they're supposed to do?
Well, I would urge them to, you know, study the practices that Mary's giving in the book. She's very practical. She gives these beautiful descriptions like the one you just mentioned, but she follows it up with, and these are the steps. So, for example, with the emotions, she gives a very clear step-by-step process of how to do that. And my experience is when you follow it, it happens. You actually are restored to that union with God. And when you're in union with God, it is natural to transmit love and light. That's our state. And part of one of the features of the third dimension is that we tend to feel separate and disconnected from God. And so we need these, you know, practices and the support for how to get reconnected. And that's what she's talking about a lot.
Would you say that learning the practices for receiving and transmitting love and light really goes as far or to the ultimate, which is unconditional love?
Yes, absolutely. And part of what she talks about in the book is this structure of higher dimensions that proceed from the third dimension into the fourth and fifth and higher dimensions. And I explain that more in the book according to my understanding. And that as we grow and are able to, you know, integrate these skills, these spiritual skills within ourselves, we are going to move into higher dimensions. And I see the fifth dimension as the place where we're really stable in constantly living as unconditional love.
I noticed very early in the messages, Mary did comment on 2012 and said it would usher in a new age of unity consciousness, and we would be entering the fifth world, which is a new epoch. So she was saying that we should allow feeling, mind, and lower heart to work together. Can you explain that, how the feeling mind and lower heart work together?
Yes. She talks about, what I understand as the lower mind as being our combination of our subconscious thinking and our rational thinking. And that for many of us, this has kind of taken over our life, where we're dominated and largely controlled by this kind of thinking. And I believe that's my definition of the ego, is when we're being dominated by this kind of lower mind thinking without it in balance with the heart and the higher mind. And she says that when we strengthen these centers that I talked about, the feminine centers of our body, our sexuality, and our emotions, that then we will start to be seated in the heart. And what will happen is that the lower mind will still be functional. We need our thinking mind. It's very useful to us. But it won't be running the show. Instead, it will be in service to our heart. And at that point, then our higher mind can awaken. And our higher mind is seated at the third eye. And that's where we start to open to things like our intuition, our higher guidance, our higher self, all of those kinds of things, cosmic wisdom. And she says there's an inner marriage that happens between our heart and our higher mind. And that's the union that's like the gateway for moving into these higher dimensions, into the new age. And for me, it's an inner marriage, and Mary Magdalene and Yeshua and their relationship are the archetype of this marriage. They're like the symbol in the world of what this beauty and this relationship is like. And I believe that's why so many people are so attracted to Mary Magdalene and her relationship with Yeshua, because they can feel within themselves, they can sense the truth of this exquisite relationship between the divine masculine and the divine feminine, and there's a longing for it. And she's saying, find it within yourself. It exists for each of you within.
I like the idea when she asks us to fall in love again with our body, feelings, emotions, and heart, and relate it to our body as a sacred temple, bring forth new life, bring your sexuality forward and give birth to your spiritual self. So I thought that was very interesting, because I believe for different reasons there are people who very much dislike or even go to the point of hating their bodies.
Yes, and this has a lot to do with our imbalance of having been in such a masculine world for so long, both culturally and spiritually, where there was such an orientation towards the mind and getting away from the body, getting away from sexuality, getting away from emotions, even looking at that as evil or sinful or the work of the devil or somehow, you know, something that was going to destroy us. And she's saying not at all, that these are beautiful manifestations of the divine, just as our mind can be, and that for many of us there's real healing work to do so that we don't feel especially shame relative to our bodies and shame relative to our sexuality. And as part of that, she's talking about that sexuality has a higher function, that you can engage sexuality as sacred sexuality, and it becomes part of what supports you in your spiritual growth and in your growth into connecting with higher levels of consciousness and higher dimension.
Yes. Of course, sexuality is another area where people have, in some cases, been brought up to feel that certain things are shameful or dirty, and in effect they're being told not to respect their body.
Right, and one of the things she alludes to in the book, fairly quite a few times is that to a certain extent, this has been done intentionally. Because when we are divorced from our body, from our sexuality, and from our emotions, we lose our power. We lose our power to be connected to God in our, you know, physical bodily being. And then when that happens, we're easy to control. And so she's very gracious. She doesn't dwell on this at all, but she feels like it's important for people to understand that this has both been in some ways intentional, and it also has been the result of what has happened. That part of us regaining our power, including our spiritual power, is realizing that this is not so, and that all of these things are beautiful manifestations of the divine.
Yes. Now, quite often through her messages, Mary talks about pain, and in one of the early ones, she says, "It's given to you to help you grow. Ask God to be guided in what you should do." Then a little bit later, she says, "Pain is meant to grow our hearts." And also, something that perhaps some people may find difficult to understand is that you cannot have pleasure without pain. Would you like to explain that?
Well, that's definitely, she's referring to the third dimension and the nature of duality that we experience here in terms of pleasure and pain going together, and that, you know, it's an illusion to think you can only be in pleasure in this reality of third dimension. But yes, she's most definitely talking about a different process of relating to pain. And she gives the steps of going through it. And she says the first step is just to realize that you're even in pain. And the reason that that's necessary is because so many of us have developed these strategies to get out of pain that happen at the speed of light. Before we even know it, we're doing our automatic reflexive reaction, you know, kind of like the kick the dog syndrome, so that we don't even realize that we're in pain. We're just doing something else that we've learned to take us. So this is like an antidote to that, where the first step is to just realize and bring awareness to the fact that you're in pain. The second step that she talks about is to open to the pain. She even takes it further than that. She says to actually embrace the pain. And this is actually a very feminine response. The masculine response is more to go in action and do something about it, fix it, you know, take care of it. The feminine response is to open to it. It's a response of surrender. And then she says the next step after that is to identify the source of the pain, and that underneath every feeling, whether, you know, what we would call pleasurable or painful, is a quality that she calls an inner divine quality, something beautiful that's part of our inner divine nature. And in the book, I give a list of many different qualities that gives people a feeling of these, that there are quite a few, but they're always something beautiful, even if we're in pain, and that's what the pain is sourcing out of. So what I'd like to do is give an example, because I think it's really helpful to understand this example. And the example I give is something very simple, but this can apply to all different situations, from very extreme, you know, situations to very ordinary, everyday situations. So the example is that you're driving, and all of a sudden someone cuts you off in traffic. And what happens for many people is that they feel some response that's arranged from anywhere from annoyance to rage. Some form of anger usually comes up. And so she says, oh, and the response, you know, is might be to get very angry if someone is more trying to be spiritual and have a spiritual response. Their response might be to try to bless the other driver or to stay detached and not get caught up in reacting to the situation, stay centered. But Mary's approach is different from all of these. Her approach would be, first of all, just to notice that you're angry And so you become conscious and aware of your response, that you're having emotion and it's anger. The second thing would be to open to the anger, to allow yourself to fully experience it, even internally embracing the feeling that you're having. And right there, you can imagine it's very different than what most of us tend to do under this kind of situation. The third step would be to bring awareness to anger. What inner divine quality is being stimulated that's causing you to have this feeling of anger in this situation? So in this example of the driving situation, the inner divine quality may be safety, that you're having a need for safety that's not being met by what just happened with this other driver. And so your inner divine quality of safety is something that's needing attention. It's needing to, you've gotten disconnected from that quality of safety that lives within you. And this is the essential point, is that the feeling is sourcing out of you and out of your inner divine quality that you've gotten disconnected from, rather than it's sourcing out of what happened on the outside, on the external. And that's a very empowering.
I'm going to say that there is emotional pain and physical pain. Are they basically the same thing?
I see them as different but related. Oftentimes when you have one, you have the other as well. But they're different things, and they're slightly different parts of ourselves that they're emanating from. Mm-hmm. But the practice can be very similar, of opening to your physical pain and allowing that to take you to God. But it's more sourcing. Physical pain tends to more source from the same one of your inner divine qualities also, and it's mostly a quality for well-being, for comfort, for maybe wholeness, and it could even be reassurance about your survival, those kinds of things. So there are physical components that also have inner divine qualities that they're connected to. Once you connect to these inner divine qualities, what happens is a shift takes place. And the shift is, first of all, the feeling tends to reside or even go away altogether, because fundamentally it's its job. Its job is to communicate to you and help you reconnect with an inner divine quality that you have gotten disconnected from. And once you're made that reconnection, you don't need the feeling anymore. And so it tends to resolve itself at that point. The second thing happens is internally you make a shift from feeling that cut off from this inner divine quality, and in that state of being cut off, there's a sense of deficiency, lack, that there was a lack of safety in this experience you just went through. Once you reconnect with that inner divine quality, you reconnect with the way it lives in you always in its wholeness, and there's a shift into a sense of fullness, completion, wholeness with that inner divine quality. And the reason is because ultimately our sense of these qualities come from God, and they are whole. Safety is a quality that is a divine quality. Our ultimate safety is in God. It's not in the world. And so when we reconnect with these qualities, we're reconnecting with the wholeness of God. And that's the third aspect. This shift, you're back into communion and union, really, with God. Then there's one more step, and it's a very important step, which is once you've made that shift, and you'll know you've made the shift because at that point what you generally experience is coming to peace. And once that happens, then you can consider, is there any action you want to take? And this is really important, that it's not about just doing the inner work and being passive in the world. It's doing the inner work first, so that when you take action, it's going to come from the place of your wholeness and connection to God rather than your disconnection. So in this driving example, there may not be an action in the outer world that you feel moved to take. Probably, you know, the car's down the road. And what you really needed to do was what you've already done. You needed to reconnect with God through your inner work. But in other circumstances, there most definitely will be actions that you're moved to take, but they probably now will be different actions than what you would have done actually if you had just reacted from that place of disconnection.
Yes.
So that's the whole process that she's talking about.
Right, carry on.
Oh, I'm complete. That's just an example. And she gives many examples, many different ways of approaching it in the book, because it's so different for most of us. She feels like we need some repetition to really start to get it and be able to take it on ourselves.
Right. Now, what I did like is Mary's comment, talking again here about pain. Ask God to take it, let it take us to God.
Yes.
And I'm guessing perhaps not too many people would think of trying to release their pain that way, as though that maybe wasn't the correct thing to do.
Yes, or even that that's a possibility. There's a beautiful quote from the book that I'd like to read where she talks about this.
Yes, of course.
If you choose to open to pain and life and God, you will likely be surprised. It won't be what you probably expect. When you open to pain, it becomes diffuse, more watery. It's like the pain is unclothed, and you experience it more in its source form. Then pain becomes a medium of movement, an avenue or stream of feeling that carries you to God. This is the river of life, and it always carries you to God. Let go of swimming upstream against the current. Go with the river of life and let it carry you to God.
Very nice. Okay, question here.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to repressed energy? Because I think the idea is we should express ourselves and not try and hold anything in, because one would assume it's not a very healthy thing anyway, but what actually happens to it?
Well, for most people, because the energy has to go somewhere. Energy just doesn't disappear, as we know from physics. So if we direct it outwards, it usually is directed outwards in, you know, pain towards other people, such as, you know, criticism, blame, judgment, those kinds of things. It also can be directed outwards in things that we consider quote unquote positive, like, you know, putting it into our work life or whatever. But those things tend to also have an inner effect, and that's the flip side is the inner, where it, first of all, it stops our inner growth because the pain is not doing the work it was intended. We're not reconnecting with those inner divine qualities that need our attending to. So that's the first thing, is we get stuck. And the second thing is that often is accompanied by patterns that are harmful to us, patterns of self-blame, self-criticism, sometimes depression, sometimes sickness, that there are all these effects that are signs of an energy blockage.
Yes, I also find Mary talks about opening to God, keeping the mind focused on love and light, and keeping your heart full of love and light, because actions are best directed by love and light. And I think she ended it out by saying surrender.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which is, again, a very feminine quality. And she's talking about surrendering to God and surrendering to our experience as a form of God and letting that carry you into God in God's fullness and wholeness, which light and the love.
Right, because a lot of people, I guess again, wouldn't really think of doing that within their life, would they?
Well, I think that's a result of what's happened with this, you know, great emphasis on the masculine, where there's a lot of attention on our thoughts and what we're doing with our mind, but not so much attention on the more feminine aspects of our body, sexuality, emotion, and the practical parts of life and how that's manifesting. And we tend to separate them, just like we tend to separate the spiritual from, you know, the profane and have this division. But really, from what she's bringing to us is that it's all a union and a unity. It's all aspects of the divine if we understand it rightly. And that coming to that understanding is what's going to help carry us into our next phase of growth and receiving the light and love and being able to live as that and shine that out to all beings and all that is.
Yes, indeed. What I really wanted to ask there, in respect of that, those statements, is some people might not know how to feel love and light. Do you think they find it difficult to think or be in love and light without any effort?
I think that is related to this idea that it's something very different from our worldly experience and that, you know, it's different from what we know in our world. I remember one time I had a conversation with my daughter and she was saying, but what if you don't feel God, or what if you don't really feel like you have a connection to God? What do you do then? And I said to her, I think everyone experiences God, but they may not realize that that's what they're experiencing. But anytime your heart opens, anytime you have a feeling of love, you know, and it can be in relationship to another person, it can be in relationship to nature, all sorts of things can elicit that, or that calmness, that opening, that peace that goes with your mind opening. These are times when you're experiencing God, and that's the beginning. And as you grow in it, you start to realize God more and more in everything, in every form, that nothing is absent from God. And to me, love and light is another description of God. And so I think it's a process, but I think the reason people don't tend to recognize it or feel like they know how to do that is because they have these ideas that it's something very different from their experience, what they've had, and they haven't been helped to see how they've had all kinds of experiences that have opened them at some level and to some degree to love, light, and God.
Yes. I also like the statement that you have the power to create peace. When there is so much turmoil going on around people or throughout the world, that may sound as being an impossibility, but is that really directed to the individual soul rather than thinking in terms of them perhaps taking responsibility for other people?
Well, that's definitely Mary's point of view, that we always start with ourselves and we have to come into this peace of reunion with God before we can be prepared to do anything in the outer world, whether it's help another person or do something, whatever it is that we feel, you know, called to do at that point. And what's more, when we do that inner work, it is going to change our outer reality. And, you know, some people call this the law of attraction. It's understood as one of the principles by many people today that your consciousness is what's calling in your reality. And so at that level also, when you do the inner work, it's going to change what's actually manifesting in your world.
Now, at various points in her messages, Mary touches upon the time that we're in now with all the changes going on. And I noticed one of the things she said is that we want to try and release our karma and purify our karma and need only purify 51% of our karma, meaning presumably that if we achieve that level, the rest is forgiven under the law of grace.
Yes. that this is what some people are calling a divine dispensation, that it's a special kind of opening that's being allowed right now for humanity and for the earth altogether through this shift into the new age and into higher consciousness. And that part of what she's saying is that this has always been available to people, but it's been very difficult in the past because it required that people purify all of their karma. And our great realizers or great teachers, yogis, saints, sages, people we've looked up to as great spiritual beings are examples of this process. But for most of us, it's felt, you know, like it's somewhere far off because we have so much we're working on. And so she has stated that part of what's so special about this time is that there's this grace being offered to us where we don't have to purify all of our karma to be making the shift and moving forward. And it's like a wonderful window of opportunity.
Notice somewhere else in one of the messages, Mary was saying that we are in the midst of a shift in consciousness, that is, and you must be full yourself before you can give to others. I guess that makes good sense. And she says, share yourself with others, respect each one's free will, assume abundance, and giving to others by letting them by telling them what they need to do. So I think this all sounds as extremely good advice.
Yes, especially the point about respecting others' free will. She's very strong about that and about waiting until people ask to offer your help, and that the beings of the higher dimensions do that. And she emphasizes also that it's important for us to ask when we want help, to ask others, but also to ask of higher beings, to ask God for help. That she strongly encourages this and says this is understood, that it's part of free will and respecting free will. So that if we want help, it's important for us to ask, and it's also important to wait for others to ask.
Yeah. As Mary also said, I think it was in the very first message, that 2012 will usher in a new age of unity consciousness, the fifth world, a new epoch. I think I mentioned that earlier. But she was saying allow the feeling mind and lower heart to work together, which again is very good advice. Here and there she reminds us about the shift, which is nice. Where was it I wanted to go next? Oh, yes. I wanted to come back to this idea of sexuality, which I think maybe some people get the wrong idea about. But I thought it was best expressed where she spoke of it as a great gift from God, a sacrament of love, great and beautiful act of devotion and love. And she's asking us to bring forth our blessings of love and light. And sexuality is one such way. So I think that puts it at a level of love and light, which then becomes quite beautiful.
I agree with that. She talks about how there are really two functions for sexuality, and they both involve bringing forth new life. One is to bring a child into the world, and the second is to give birth to our full spiritual self, and that sexuality is one medium that supports that and allows us to create our full light body through our energy body, and also to connect with our spiritual body and fulfill our divine purpose that we have come here to manifest. And that's what she and Yeshua were doing, and it was very much in support of the work that we recognize as work and teaching, and that they understood that. And she talks about that, you know, anyone who is choosing to be sexually active and engaging sexuality can do it in this, can have this orientation, can learn about this through people who are teaching sacred sexuality, and that she highly recommends that, and that it will not only support our spiritual life and growth, but it will also greatly enrich our intimacies, because part of what we're longing for in our sexuality is ultimately union with God. And we can experience that with this understanding and orientation that is part of sacred sexuality. And if we don't have that, oftentimes what happens is we get frustrated with our sexuality because we intuit that there's more. We want this ultimate fulfillment, but to place it on our partner to provide that is actually not realistic and oftentimes burdensome. And so she's urging people to understand this and to get this training that will just make your sexuality more wonderful and more fulfilling.
Yes, and I also noted that Mary talks about the joy of forgiveness. I guess some people might not understand how there is joy in that. I don't suppose someone of the light is seeking any medals for being able to forgive someone, but I'm sure it makes them feel good to take that approach where another soul is concerned.
Absolutely. And again, it's another form where something's blocking us, where there's some emotion, you know, that's still there that isn't resolved, and the source of the emotion hasn't been addressed to whatever the inner divine quality is. And so we're stuck with emotions like resentment or anger or pain or whatever it is. And again, when we really address that inner divine quality and reconnect in ourselves, the emotion, the painful emotion that we're having will resolve and we'll return to our natural state of love, which forgiveness is one aspect of that, and compassion as well.
Yes, because of this business of blame and judgment and forgiveness, it again reminds me that you have to forgive those who you feel have done something against you, but the fact still remains that whoever is involved in any experience, it's set up really for every one of you that's in it, and you really shouldn't be looking to blame someone for starting it. You should maybe just thank them for being part of it for your benefit.
Yes, and that's part of what will come when you've done this inner work, is you'll start to realize the gifts, you'll start to realize how it's helping you for your growth, perhaps what your part was in it that you weren't seeing, and all of those things. It's like your mind is opened up and released because you're not stuck in this knot of painful emotion anymore, and you'll see these other aspects, and that'll be part of the forgiveness process also.
Mary talks about bringing love to yourself and all part of your reality. So I guess that's pretty self-explanatory. If you are love, then you give love anyway.
Right. What's somewhat different is that she's, again, being very specific and practical about the parts of ourselves that we don't tend to love. Many of us is our bodies, our emotions, and our sexuality, and that we need to love that, and we need to, again, learn these skills and these processes if we have, you know, learned other patterns that aren't loving patterns towards ourselves, that we need to replace them with these loving patterns that will support us in being able to maintain and be stable in that love.
Yes, indeed. She talks of union with your greater self and greatest self, and she has mentioned in another chapter that we have a higher self, and says that when you do, you will know all is God and lack, scarcity, and fear of survival isn't an issue then. And I think that's right, isn't it?
Oh, that was one of my favorite messages where she talked about that. She was talking about being able to stay in the disposition of abundance. And she said, what is it that really keeps you from feeling this? And she went through a few considerations and got down to what she considered the root, which was our assumption about death and our fear about death, that we're going to be, you know, snuffed out and that will be the end, and that our life always has this tension where we're trying to survive and feeling like if we don't fight for our survival, that we're going to lose and we'll lose everything. We'll lose ourselves. And she said, that is a very important thing to realize is not the right understanding. That she said, death is actually just a transition. She said, it's something like getting a new car or changing your clothes. You're going to go on to another state, but you absolutely do not get snuffed out or wiped out when you die. And she said, if you knew that, how would that change things for you? How would you live differently? And then she moved into that, you know, having this sureness within ourselves that death is just a passage that we go through and we continue afterwards is what allows us to live in the assumption of abundance.
Yes. Talking of changing from blame to love, Mary mentions that words carry power and that we are the creators of our own reality, and to be ready to let go of striving to be right or proving that others are wrong. I think that's also excellent advice.
Right. And she says that's part of our trying to maintain control, part of what this mind does of proving rightness and wrongness, because we've learned that if we can be right, we'll be rewarded, we'll be loved, or we'll get our way, or whatever it is. And the same for proving the other person wrong. But she says, actually, this is a very, you know, this is a great misunderstanding. And from her point of view, there is no such thing as right or wrong. There's simply our actual experience, that right and wrong are judgments, and our actual experience is some form of something much more grounded. It's an emotional experience and a physical experience of pain or pleasure, and that our work is to address that rather than go into our minds and deflect into the judgment of rightness or wrongness. One of the quotes from the book, she says, is, be willing to let go of striving to be right or proving that others are wrong. Stand vulnerable and open-hearted in your experience, including your pain. Discover whether you are loved. See if God exists and if God loves you. I have no doubt of the outcome of that experiment.
Yes. Now, Mary spoke in one of the latter messages about opening to God through sexuality. Now, we have just spoken of it being at a level where we're talking of it being expressed in love and light, but how is it resulting in one being able to open to God?
Well, there are specific practices, and she's referencing that, where people learn how to use the sexual energy in a way that opens up your higher centers, opens up your heart, opens up your higher mind, and allows you to access this higher consciousness. And that's really the essence of sacred sexuality, is learning those practices, which actually aren't limited to sexual circumstances. You can do them under any circumstances, but you can bring them into your sexuality. And because there's power in sexuality, the power of attraction and love that you experience with a partner, it makes that practice even more empowered. And it becomes a particularly strong method of accessing and supporting that opening to your heart, your higher mind, and to higher states of consciousness, higher states of reality. So that's what she's talking about. And I knew as she was giving the messages in this book that she wanted to introduce that because it's a key part of the divine feminine. And she wanted that included so people had the whole picture. But in this book, she's really focusing more on the emotional aspect than on our relationship with our sexuality, because she felt like it was more important. It was more the area that was really holding people back. And I knew it was going to be sexual coming through, where she's giving the specific sexual practices. And she actually has already given that book to me, and that book is in the process of coming out, so that there will be a follow-up to this book that will be particularly going into just the practices of sacred sexuality as she learned it and as she sees it as most beneficial for us.
In the latter part of the book, right near the end, there is a part in there which is the call to all hearts, asking people to open their hearts, feel from their heart, and live from their hearts. And mentioning that most of us learn to suppress our feelings as children, first from our parents and later from the education system. So I think that is nice. It's inviting people, I believe, to literally be themselves, isn't it? Their real self.
Absolutely, and their higher self. And in some ways, it's kind of a summary of what she's presenting throughout. And I hear that chapter as she's saying, all right, I've given you the tools. I've given you the steps. You have what you need. Now go forth and do it. And it very much reminds me of Joan of Arc gathering the troops and saying, we're prepared. Let's go forward. And I love the very last sentences of that message, which were her very final sentences that she gave in this whole series. And I'd like to share that with people.
Yes.
She says,
I think, Mercedes, I've actually covered most of my notes on points I wanted to raise with and talk about. Is there perhaps any aspect of the messages that I haven't mentioned that you particularly want to bring to light, or would you like to add anything at all?
I love what you've brought forth, and it really has been very complete, and I appreciate that so much. Just one thing that I always feel is important is, and she actually brought this out right at the very beginning, was that she also expressed to me that Yeshua as well, that both of them understood that it would be 2,000 years from the time that they were incarnated before humanity was ready for the teaching about the divine feminine and ready to incarnate this within ourselves. And now that time, and that is why the divine feminine is being talked about a lot, and it's why so many people are having a connection with Mary Magdalene, and she's manifesting in so many forms to people. I was amazed when I started telling people about what was happening with me, because I didn't realize before then how many people have a connection with Mary Magdalene. But I would say her name, and it was as though the doors to their hearts would fly open. And then I would start to hear their stories about their love for Mary Magdalene and how they've experienced her. And I was just amazed. It was so beautiful to me that there are people all over who have such a profound connection to her. And I think it has everything to do with the age and the timing that we're in, and that this is the for the divine feminine to really manifest and come forth and to be what's guiding us into this new age of equality.
Yes, it's so nice to think that we are being helped to bring that type of balance in. Now, you'll probably like to mention your website address and tell our listeners where your book is available from.
Yes, the website for the book is www.marymagdalenebeckons.com. And that's Mary Magdalene is MAGDALENE, and then Beckons, BECKONS.com. And there's a video trailer, there's lots of other information about the book, and you can order the book through the website. And then it's also available through Amazon, both in the U.S. and Europe. And in paperback and Kindle form. It's available through Barnes & Noble in paperback and also in the Nook ebook form, and it's available through iTunes. And it's also something that can be ordered through a local bookstore. So lots of ways to...
That's wonderful. Just as a point, do you think you might follow that up with more messages at some time in the future?
Oh, yes. Well, I give regular messages that I have a newsletter, and if you also go to the MaryMagdalenBeckons.com website,
you can
newsletter where weekly messages that come out. But there is another book coming forth, and I'm hoping within the year that will be ready, and that will be the book on sacred sexuality again, Mary. So there's another book in the works.
That sounds lovely. You're certainly a very, very busy person with all this work you're doing. But it's wonderful to speak to you, to speak to a fellow soul who is understanding of the period that we're in and what we need to do to flow with it. So I have to thank you very much, Mercedes, for coming onto the program. It's been very enjoyable speaking with you.
Oh, thank you. I have enjoyed it very much myself and really appreciate your having me.
Welcome. Thank you very much. Right, friends. That was Mercedes Kirkle. Certainly knows what she's got in the book, doesn't she? She's on the ball every time. Now, next week, it's still subject to confirmation, but I haven't received it so far. My computer's been out of action most day where my emails are concerned. But I'm expecting to have Keith Pendlebury, who's wants to talk about his free One Cancer Cure ebook. He says it's too important to tell, so he's sort of giving it away in that form. He says they were successful with the cancer cure that he talks about, with no surgery, no chemo, and no radiation. And he says he's not selling it. He wants other people to enjoy the knowledge that he has. So I hope he's still available. And if so, thank you for being with me today, and I look forward to being with you next week. Thank you very much.